The full Will Chase experience. I love it.
The following is a production by Cutting to the Chase Podcast.
Jim Beringer, what's up, man? We have chatted a couple times before. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas. Hope you have a good new year coming up. You're about to head to Florida for the Winter Classic for the Rangers and the Panthers. How are you? How is it going?
Well, what's going on, buddy? Yeah, good to be back here with you on a podcast. Life is good, you know, can't complain, though. North Jersey going to get some snow tonight into Saturday. So we're recording here on a Friday. So Friday night into Saturday on the East Coast, Jersey style snow. But I cannot wait to leave this 30 degree weather and head south to 80 degrees and sunny. I cannot wait to hit the beach, and I can't wait to get my tan on and watch some outdoor hockey, quasi outdoor hockey. But that's okay, because apparently the roof will be open and the windows will be open, and the Florida Panthers and New York Rangers get to take it outside. So I'm cool with it.
Yeah. So how much snow are you expecting to get in Jersey?
Depends where you are. Higher elevations over a foot. Where I am, we're on the border of either 5 to 8 inches or 8 to 10, depending on where the snow falls.
Do you like the snow?
Not anymore, no.
I don't either.
Look, it's nice to look at. If it's on the ground, it gives you a nice winter feel, like yeah. All that. Like if it's there, okay, it's nice to look at, all that stuff. To deal with it, no.
Yeah, I actually have some cousins coming in from Jersey for I guess today, in fact. So I guess they're missing the snow. But yeah, I don't love snow. I'm over it. I'm not in school anymore like you, so we don't care about snow anymore. It just makes it more messy. But like you said, you're going to be heading into very nice temperatures here, I would imagine, in Florida over the next few days and week. So how excited are you for Rangers and Panthers in this rendition of the Winter Classic?
Yeah, it's going to be a good game. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, it looks like there could be some, you know, maybe Matthew Tkachuk can make his debut for the Florida Panthers in that game, maybe, or they'll hold him back until they get to a regular ice surface inside. But he's supposed to be practicing with the team once the holiday break is over, which is Saturday. So teams are allowed to have morning skates and do all that stuff and all that fun jazz. Because obviously, if you do anything today and the league finds out, you're going to get fined. If you decide to travel today, the league finds out, you will get fined. So I think, like, if you look at it, I'm looking forward to it. Like I said, I think the Panthers are coming up. You know, they're coming up the standings. They had a slow start to the year just because of all the injuries, and they're still fighting the injuries, but they're getting their guys back. Now, we still have, you know, the Panthers still believe Barkov's going to come back at some point, so they can't put him on season-ending LTIR. Kulikov, we'll see when he comes back. But they're looking to prime to make a move, potentially grab a defenseman before maybe the Winter Classic or a little after that, heading an Olympic break. I'm looking at it from Panthers. They're right in a wild card spot right now. The Rangers, they're there where I thought they would be. Like on the outside looking in, I didn't really peg them as a playoff team. But so many questions surrounding this team. Like, what Ranger team are we going to get? Are we get the team that shows up in Madison Square Garden? I mean, this is a quasi-road game anyway, so they play well on the road, and they play well in these types of games. I believe they don't have a loss. If memory serves me correct, I think they're the only undefeated team left in this game. There might be another one. Boston might be another team. Boston lost to Montreal in 2016, somewhere around there. So, but I mean, look, the Rangers don't have a loss, and like they play well in these games. But again, it's a battle of teams near the bottom of, not bottom of the standings, but battling for wild card. But I just don't see the Rangers a playoff team.
Yeah, both teams right now, as we talk, they each have 42 points. But like you said, the Rangers, they had a really weird start to their year where they can't win at home, but they win every game on the road. And I guess that's maybe started to level out a little bit, but it's just so weird. Have you ever seen that before where a team was literally losing and getting shut out all the time at home, but they were winning their road games?
No, I never saw that before. That's a first for me. I think it was like the first time since like the 1920s where something like this was happening. And I think they've been shut out like 7 times on the season, and 6 of them have been at home. They just can't score at home. At one point, I think they played like, I don't want to say like six home games or something. They scored like 9 goals. I'm like, this is ridiculous. Like, what are they doing? But there is a pressure of playing in New York, playing in that building. Like, and the opponent coming into that building wants to do well in Madison Square Garden. But the team is just not constructed correctly. The ownership, the GM, everything, just top to bottom, just not good with this team. A lot of questions, still a lot of distractions with the team, especially Panarin. Like, is he going to get traded at the deadline? Are they going to resign him? Like, what's going to happen there with the Rangers? There's too much, still a lot of distractions there. And I just wasn't ever sold on Mike Sullivan as a head coach for this team. I know a lot of Rangers fans like him, but I still see a lot of deficiencies that he brought over from Pittsburgh creeping into the Rangers game. That I know their numbers, their metrics say they're better defensively, but there's times where there's too much play going on the Rangers end.
So what are the like primary issues with the Rangers and Sullivan that you're seeing? And would he have benefited from like a year off in between Pittsburgh and New York, or even just a different team in your mind?
Yeah, I think the issue for me is defensively. Like, this team, as much as, yeah, they're constructed better and they're limiting other opponents' chances, is they're just getting pinned in their zone too long. Like, this has happened to Pittsburgh when he was there, too. This is why they couldn't hold leads either, right? Like, his last couple runs with the Penguins, right? First of all, they hadn't won a playoff series since 2018. That's one. Two, they lose to the Islanders a couple of times. They lose to Montreal in that play-in round. They're up multiple times by multiple goals against the Rangers in 2022 as the head coach of the Penguins. Had a multi-goal lead in Game 7 and lost. Then they failed to make the playoffs because of Florida's run, but they couldn't hold leads and lose to Blackhawks. Like, I'm seeing that type of game creep into the Rangers game. And you can't score, and that doesn't help. Like, you can defend all you want. That's all well and good. But you just, if you can't score and your top players aren't delivering, that's a problem.
So it sounds like what you're saying is the Blue Jackets need they have their own offense, but they could use the Rangers defense, and then the Blue Jackets would at least be a perfect team right now, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think they're playing a lot better. I think the addition of Mason Marchment was huge for them. I've always liked that player. I always think that he was a good player. New Jersey couldn't go get him. He would have been a perfect fit for the Devils, but again, no cap space. But I like that aggressiveness by Don Waddell to go at a player like that. I mean, I think he had a wave to go to Columbus, but it's this, you know, steep cost to go get him. But I, you know, the fact that he's got 3 goals in 2 games already, like, yeah, he's potting goals. He's making the offense a little bit more dynamic, something that they needed. A couple of big wins now here for the Blue Jackets heading and they're not out of this thing. Like, the thing is with the Eastern Conference is if you go on a winning streak of a week, you're back in it. You're back in it. And like, with the way the Metro's going, if the Jackets start rolling off some wins, they could be in the playoff mix in no time.
Yeah, because with the Metro, Washington for a minute there was surging, and now they're 7th in the East, right ahead of Florida and New York, who have 42 points apiece. Like you said, the Metro, the entire league, have you seen that before? Where, like, the entire league is pretty much in it. Even Buffalo, they get Jarmo Kekäläinen in there as the GM, and all of a sudden they're perfect. Since then, they're up to 13th in this overall conference standings, but they've won like 7 in a row. And yeah, it changes every other day. Pittsburgh, they are on a horrible slump, but they are technically they're 15-12-9, and that's with this recent slump that they're in. So Columbus is dead last in the East, but they're 15-15-6. I don't know. Have you seen it bunched like this before?
No, I have not seen it bunched like this before. Like, I have not. Like, this is really the definition of parity, and whether you want to believe Alan Walsh or you want to believe, you know, Milstein saying it's false parity, or this is Gary's parity created because of the point system and the salary cap and all that. And I think that has a lot to do with it, is because the salary cap has kept these teams. And there's good players on good teams now. It's not like years gone by where there were some teams that just had no talent. Like, they had NHL talent, don't get me wrong, but the skill set of each of these teams didn't match the other skill set. And you could see teams start to pull away. Now we're not seeing that. And with so many overtime games early into the season, 3-point games are essential. Like, I almost wonder if we would be seeing this if there was the international system 3-2-1, right? Like, I think we would finally see what the playoff mix would actually be. I think it would be so tough for some of these teams near the bottom of standings to, you know, come up, and maybe we would get more trades because of it. But I've never seen anything like it. I remember we had the one year where eight of the teams in the Eastern Conference had 100 points when they made the playoffs. That was astonishing. And the fact that all these teams are so close, and like pretty much every team in the Eastern Conference, you know, 1 through 16 is still alive for the playoffs is remarkable.
Yeah. Do you think that it has anything to do with, I guess it's a compressed schedule in the Olympics in February, and like you have just everyone playing so often, maybe a little bit more than it would be otherwise. Are teams just tired? Is it parity as far as talent? Obviously I'm zeroed in on the Jackets, and they blow every third period lead ever, it seems.
They remind me of the Islanders from a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you were at that Jackets Devils game, right? The first time.
Yeah, with the fights. Yeah.
So, I mean, I know Columbus won that game. I think it might have gotten into like a one goal. It might have been a one goal lead at some point in the third before they pulled away. But in general, almost every lead is never safe with them. And is that what's kind of going across the league so far this year? Where, I mean, it's not just Columbus. Other teams have had third period woes, not quite to the degree and level of Columbus. But do you think it has anything to do with the scheduling, and maybe teams are just fatigued even more so, or is it just a weird coincidence?
No, I think there's a fair point to be said about the schedule, because last year we had a condensed schedule, but the parity wasn't as much there because guys were, you know, four nations. It was four nations. It's not like everybody was playing for Olympics, but still, it was still a condensed schedule. They still shut the league down for a little bit, but it was NHL players playing in four nations. NHL players are playing the Olympics, but the practice schedule isn't as much. You know, there's more days off, and there was a condensed training camp this year. It wasn't as long as it used to be, right? And that's going to be a factor moving forward too. And I think you see that across all sports, not just the National Hockey League. So when guys can't practice, guys can't work on fundamentals, can't work on your defensive systems, you're only doing things on morning skates, if you are, optional skate. Like, to me, I would be a guy, like, even if they told me, hey, day off, I'd still be on the ice working on something, because, you know, you need to get better. And these teams just can't work on stuff, and the practices are limited. And so I think it's a combination of everything. And you could see, like, clearly with New Jersey, like, when they practice, it's a strange coincidence. When they practice and they play the next day, they play better than they do if they're on a back-to-back or they don't have a practice or something like that. I don't know what it is, but I think it's just a combination of so much stuff that the body is just gets fatigued. And three games in four nights, five and seven, like, they just add up after a while. So that's why you're seeing, you know, teams are never out of it. And that's why you can see the Buffalo Sabres ratcheting off seven straight wins and still be in this thing.
Yeah. So going back to that Rangers-Panthers game. So New York is ninth currently in the Eastern Conference. Florida is eight. They both have the same amount of points, but Florida has played three fewer games. It's also Florida. They, like you alluded to earlier, they are banged up. They are missing guys who will be coming back. In your mind, do you feel like Florida, I mean, they should only get better, right? They should be a top. They may not be the one seed. They may not be a three seed, but they have the quote unquote championship pedigree. They've been there obviously three in a row, and they've won the last two. Do you think that this team can win it all again this year? I mean, obviously they can, but like, keeping in mind the fact that they have gone deep into June three straight years, eventually that's going to catch up with them, right?
I mean, you would think it would catch up with them. But again, see, here's the thing. Like, how many guys are actually going from Florida to go play in the Olympics? There's going to be a couple of guys, right? But the rest of the team's got a couple of weeks off to rest. Like, the main culprit is not playing. Their goalie. Bobrovsky's off for 2 weeks, 18 days. Like, he's legit off. Now, you could practice and do whatever you want, but I'm saying, like, he's off. Like, there's going to be guys that are going to be rested. Like, some of their older guys, if say Marchand doesn't go, right? Like, say Brad Marchand doesn't go or Sam Bennett doesn't go, they can rest up a little bit, recoup, right? Now that gives Barkov more time. Like, I'm really going to be interested in, when it comes to the Olympics and the Panthers, like, how they utilize Matthew Tkachuk, because he's just coming back, right, from that injury, from surgery. Like, I wonder how Team USA utilizes his minutes, keeps him, you know, obviously he probably will go through his playoff routine where he never took morning skate. He never, like, he didn't do any of that stuff. He just, that was game day and he played, and then he than he did his recovery and stuff. So I'm kind of curious to see what they do there. But Florida's only getting better. Like, outside of maybe adding a depth defenseman and maybe a depth forward, they're really just adding their own guys back from the injury list. Like, that's their trade deadline pickups. Unless they can move some money to get a player that helps them long-term that has some value still on their contract, they're going to add a guy like Alexiak or a player like that or Mario Ferraro to just insulate their defense to help their bottom pair or their second unit out there. But to add, like, go after a Seth Jones type this year, I don't see it. But yeah, I mean, eventually you would think the bodies, these guys going for so long, and maybe it was the beginning of the season. We saw it with Edmonton, right? Edmonton was their opponent for the last 2 years. They're starting to turn it on. McDavid is finally starting to turn it on with 31 points in his last 11 games. So I would think that, you know, after a while, if they get the correct time off and, you know, have that a little extra break, I can't put it past the Florida Panthers going back to Stanley Cup final again.
Do you think right now, if you had a guess, would you have Florida against Edmonton in the final, or would you have different Western Conference team or East?
I mean, outside of the Florida Panthers, who am I really? I think it would be Florida or Tampa in the East right now, because I just don't trust anybody else to be there. Out West, I could put Colorado, Dallas ahead of Edmonton.
Yep. Yeah, I think like you said, in the East, it's hard to count out Florida and Tampa for obvious reasons. And I'm not sold. Like, you know, I look at the standings. We know Carolina's story. They're probably like the third team behind Florida and Tampa. But yeah, there's that gap there. And then with Detroit and Philly and Montreal, it's like the list goes on. I don't necessarily trust any of those teams more so than obviously Florida and Tampa. And then I guess Carolina, like Detroit looks good right now, but we've seen that before. They haven't made the playoffs in so long at this point. They should be there this year, but I can't necessarily see them, you know, going all the way to the final. No. So yeah, Florida, Tampa, maybe Carolina are like the top three. And then in the West, like, dude, the Avalanche 27-2-7. Ridiculous. That's going to be, I mean, they lose one or two games here and there, and it's like the 96 Bulls. They win another 10 in a row or whatever. They remind me, obviously, of the Blackhawks in the lockout year back when they won their second cup, I think, in 13, when they were like, they had that crazy unbeaten streak. But this is over a full 82 game season. So I'm sure they're going to slump a little bit at some point, but they're going to have such a huge advantage. They'll be fine. But yeah, Colorado, Dallas, and then Minnesota. Is Minnesota like maybe the third best team in the West for you right now after the Quinn Hughes trade?
They should be, right? I think they are with Kaprizov, the dual monster in net, with Volstad and Gustafsson. You have Boldy there as well. They're still a good team, but again, Minnesota's got to get out of the first round. They haven't really made a deep playoff run since the miracle of Andrew Brunette and company back in 03 when they lost to the Mighty Ducks of Anaheim. But, I mean, if I think about it, like, realistically, like, how can I not say the Edmonton Oilers aren't the third best team in the Western Conference right now when McDavid and Draisaitl are going at the clip they're going at? Hyman looks like Hyman again, right? And the depth that we didn't think they have, which I still don't think they have, they're starting to play a lot better in the front of their goaltending. Now let's see what happens. You put all your eggs in the Tristan Jarry basket, and now he's going to be out a couple of weeks. Let's see what happens. Can I not say the Edmonton Oilers are not the third best team in the conference? You know, realistically, they're the two-time Western Conference champions. Yeah. I mean, they have McDavid and Draisaitl, right? Like, I think they're the best duo in National Hockey League. When those guys are going, the Oilers are going. I mean, look, Quinn Hughes is great, but Minnesota's going to have to play Colorado and or Dallas in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Vegas, what's Vegas? Like, when they're healthy, they're a really good team, but their defense is still old and slow. And what about that goaltending? Can that hold up? So I think there's a tier of Colorado, Dallas, and then there's like kind of everybody else.
Yeah, Vegas is weird. They have 10 overtime/shootout losses this year. It seems like they go to shootout or overtime every game and almost lose every game, but they're 17-8-10. But is Vegas kind of, we know they're good and they'll be a playoff team, but are they kind of, I don't know, not quite the elite team that they might have been, obviously, a couple of years ago when they were in the final?
Well, I mean, that defense is not the same that it was when they were in the final, right? Like, they had a big bashing defense, Petrangelo, Nick Hague, like, you had Shea Theodore back there. They beat you up, like, Jack Eichel was playing well, Mark Stone, right? They had good goaltending, and Aiden Hill was there. Like, they had a lot of good goaltending there. But now you kind of saw it the last couple of years in the playoffs, even though Minnesota never beat them in a playoff series, Minnesota kind of exposed that D, a little old and slow. Couldn't get to loose pucks. You know, if it wasn't for a bounce here and there, maybe Minnesota takes out Vegas last year in the first round of playoffs. Kaprizov seems to always play well in the playoffs, which is a good thing. And then if they ran into Edmonton, Edmonton skate them out of the building. Like, and that's the difference, right? Edmonton or Colorado skate them out of the building because their defense just going to keep up. So, look, I think Vegas is good. I think their identity has changed a lot since they first came into the league, and especially when they won the Stanley Cup. Now you're seeing more skill, more fast, their speed up front, especially with the addition of Marner. Let's see, you know, what do they look to do? What do they look to add? Because you know Kelly McCrim is looking to do something once the trade freeze lifts. But again, they don't really have the assets and or the cap space to really do anything right now.
Looking at the Blackhawks, they were playing really well with Bedard, but never since he went down, they've lost, what is it? Let me look at it real fast. I think it's six in a row. Yeah, six in a row. So now they don't have Bedard for a while, and he could have like a separated shoulder and be out who knows how long. And then Frank Nazar is out now. So if the Blackhawks still have Connor Bedard right now, do you think that they obviously probably haven't lost six in a row, but do you think they would have been sort of in that wild card conversation the rest of the year? Or do you think that this was eventually going to happen where the Hawks were going to fall off? Because one guy can't be that much of a difference, right, between playoffs and then being at the bottom of the league. He helps a lot, obviously. He's our best player. But I kind of feel like without Bedard, maybe they're not this bad for real, but it's been a huge drop off.
Yeah, I mean, look, you could say the same thing about New Jersey when Jack Hughes is out of lineup. Like, they can't score, but they can't score with him in the lineup either. And New Jersey kind of just like goes and kind of spats out a little bit because of, you know, what they do offensively. But as for Chicago goes, I mean, Bedard was having a hell of a season. He was top five in points at one point.
Yeah.
You know, before the shoulder injuries, a freak accident on a faceoff. Looked like initially towards bicep, to be honest, the way the shoulder, you know, the way he was holding his arm, because it just happened so quickly on a draw. The way Bedard was playing in his third season, like he didn't have bad seasons his first two seasons in the NHL. I think a lot of people had higher expectations and, you know, they just didn't live up. Like he didn't live up to the expectations that other people put in their minds. But if you look at his statistics, he actually had a really good two first good seasons. He was on pace to make career season, and he took his next step. And it's unfortunate because you don't want to have him, because he had a shoulder injury his first season in the league too. He missed time, similar to what Jack Hughes is going through. So you don't want to go down that path, because then you're going to start getting labeled as injury prone. And he had put size on, his shot was better. Frankie Nazar started hot. Like, Spencer Knight was playing well. Jeff Blashaw is a really good coach, but I think they start off so hot that you just can't keep playing 600 hockey the whole season, and eventually they're going to hit a slump. Like, but they still have a lot of talent on the team, but you could clearly see what the difference is when their young guys aren't going. But I still think can't keep counting out Chicago. I mean, I don't think anybody expect them to be in the playoffs this year. The fact that they were there for so long before the injury is, you know, it stinks for them, because I think the idea was for Kyle Davidson maybe to just like stand pat with things and let his young group maybe experience what meaningful hockey was at the back half of the season.
Yeah, I feel like they finally have a core, at least with, obviously a core, but also thinking about Spencer Knight and goal, that was a huge upgrade when they got him. That Seth Jones trade worked out for them. I'm actually going to see the Hawks against the Caps January 3rd, so next Saturday, and I'm also going to see the Rangers against the Caps on New Year's Eve, so I'll get to see them before you see them on the 2nd.
It's interesting, too, because the Rangers, they fly down after the game on New Year's Eve, and then they have practice the next day outside.
Yeah, so I will be in the I'll be in the 400 level, but you'll be in the press box level, obviously.
I will be in the press box level. Yes.
So yeah, what excites you going back to the Winter Classic? Also, do you like that it's on January 2nd, or do you wish that it was still on the 1st? I mean, I guess it doesn't matter, but
I mean, me personally, I mean, I like it when it was on the first, but I understand why they're doing it because college football is like, again, the Winter Classic is for the markets. It's I don't want to say it hasn't lost its national appeal because that would be fair to the game itself. Mm. But the game is about the experience. We were there for the game in Ohio. Like, we understand what that game was about. It's about the setting for the fans there. If it does well on TV, it does well on TV. But January 1st now, because of the college football playoff, it's going to get lost in a shuffle somewhere with so many games on. So, and it was a college football day. It was January 1st anyway. But it's so hard because if you have to play it at a certain time. If you could play it in the 1 o'clock window, but the issue is the sun and the weather. And so I like the fact that they moved it to January 2nd at night. I wish the game was a little earlier, but it's okay. Yeah. But it really should be a standalone day. Like, it really should be. The Winter Classic, any outdoor game should be have a standalone day, and this should be the only game on. But the game will be fun. It's going to be competitive. It's two good teams.
Yeah. Yeah. I know last year the Hawks and Blues played New Year's Eve. So it's been a few years.
That game sucked. Like, I'm
not gonna lie. There, right?
Yeah. It wasn't a good game. Like, it really wasn't a good game. It was a blowout. Like, the Blues, like, killed them. The game was over in a second period, and that was it. Like, it wasn't. Yeah. Like, it was cool to be there. Wrigley's a great setting.
Yeah.
But the game was not good. Most of the time, the games are not good.
Right. Oh, I know. Have you been to Wrigley? I mean, you've been there before, I'm assuming.
That was my first time at Wrigley. That was awesome. Great experience. Yeah. I like the old baseball stadiums or the old college stadiums, football stadiums. Like, those for me are the best for, like, outdoor hockey.
Yeah, I need to get back to Wrigley. I've only been there the one time, and it was for a Cubs game back in 2001, but it's been a long ass time since I've been there. So it's really cool that your first experience was actually a hockey game, because many people can say that.
Well, my first experience at the Shoe was a hockey game.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So so as far as like the going back again, Rangers Panthers. So like we were talking about, they're both like, you know, they're both in the same spot in the standings, but we all know Florida is a better team overall, or at least that should bear itself out as they get healthier and start to, and they've already been playing well lately. And the Rangers are still kind of like, they're 4-4-2 in their last 10. And they're, you know, going back to like Artemi Panarin, do you, obviously we know Panarin's a great player. Do you think he's like a winning player that, I think any playoff team would love to have him, but like, is he a guy that would you expect more? I guess, like, with the Rangers and how he's been with the Rangers since he got there, do you expect more maybe come playoff time, or is he doing what he can and it's just overall beyond just Panarin?
Here's the thing: I saw Panarin do some things in Columbus in the playoffs that I thought would translate in New York, but again, coaching matters too in the playoffs. Good coaches know how to take good players away. And if good players get taken away, you expect others to step up. Yeah, he turned the puck over. Is there a certain style he needs to start to play? Yes. But again, I will reference the 2019 Columbus Blue Jackets. He had a heck of a playoff in the first two, in both rounds for the Columbus Blue Jackets that year. It was a big reason why Columbus swept the Lightning, and it was a big reason why it went 6 against the Boston Bruins. So it's not like he can't do it. Same with Bobrovsky, and Bobrovsky has stepped up in Florida. I think the issue is the way the Rangers were playing, and then they ran into good teams like Tampa, like New Jersey, like Florida. You know, they take good players away, and when Panarin or another player like that figures it out, it's too late. And that's what he did. He figured it out too late. And instead of trying to figure it out early in the series, he figured it out too late. And the Rangers go home. And I think a lot of people expected more from him in the playoffs. I think he has done everything he could offensively in the regular season. His numbers have been great. But I think people expected more in the playoffs from him. And I don't blame them. I mean, when you're paying a guy 11-7-6, you know, you expect him to do more in the Stanley Cup playoffs. That's where you're getting your money's worth. And you know, he hasn't delivered in every sense of the word. He just hasn't. He hasn't scored those big goals. He hasn't had that big moment to win a series. it's been other guys, and he needs to step up. Now, again, what will happen this year? It's going to be interesting because from what I'm hearing, you know, the Rangers don't want to go – they don't want to give him a lot of money, and they don't want to go big term with him. They want to stay 3-4 years with him, but they want him under 10. They want him in the eights, maybe less than that. So what does he want? And is he justified to still get the same pay rate? If that's the case, he's going someplace else, and they're going to try to get assets for him. So, and I think a contending team that needs a scoring winger could use a guy like Artemi Panarin.
With the Avalanche and being 27-2-7, do they have a weakness, or is there something about them that you're like, obviously they're a great team, they have won the cup even though it's been a few years, but you know, what do they still lack?
I mean, look, until Scott Wedgwood and Mackenzie Blackwood prove to me that they can win in the playoffs, I know what those guys are. I saw them both in New Jersey. Now, don't get me wrong. I think Avalanche are playing the defense that they did with Darcy Kuemper in between because they won in spite of Kuemper, not because of him. But their system allowed him to come up with the big save, and that's what those two are doing right now. My question is what's going to happen when they get punched in the mouth? Like, at some point, a team's going to get punched in the mouth. Let's see what happens, because Chicago got punched in the mouth a couple times in the playoffs in 2013. If we remember correctly, Jonathan Toews had to be calmed down in the penalty box by Brent Seabrook. They went down 3-1 to Detroit in a Western Conference final, or maybe it was the round before, maybe second round at the time when Detroit was still out west. But they had a chance to knock off the Chicago Blackhawks, and they didn't do it. And Chicago went on to win their second cup in a couple of years. And then they got punched in the mouth again by Boston. They go down 2-1. Seabrook scores the big goal in game 4. They figured out how to win game 5, rallying game 6. So instead of being the Lightning in 2019, can you be the Blackhawks if you get punched in the mouth and just settle it real quick? And good teams know how to do that. It is the Colorado Avalanche Invitational right now. Can they be the Detroit Red Wings? I think it was like 08 or 2002 where they won a President's Trophy. But we've seen all these teams put up these ridiculous amount of points and then do nothing. Right. So, again, I go back to the Bulls. What do the Bulls always say? Don't mean a thing if you can't win a ring. And look, Golden State Warriors set the all-time winning record for most wins in a season in the NBA. Guess what? Doesn't matter. They didn't win the NBA championship. No ring, lost to the Cavs. The Bulls did it. Let's see if the Avs can do it. It'd be a great story, let's be honest. I don't think they have a weakness, but I definitely think they're looking for a center, like depth centerman, depth defenseman. That's it. Because right now, this team doesn't have a weakness. But the thing is with the Avs right now, they remind me of the team that won the Stanley Cup because of the depth that they have. It's not just MacKinnon, Makar, and Natchez doing everything. Like back then, before they got Kadri there and before they brought in all this depth, it was Rantanen, it was MacKinnon, it was Makar, and that was it. So teams knew how to shut them down. Now, can't really shut everybody down anymore because Nichushkin's playing well. Lekin is playing well. You know, Natchez is there. Like, Brock Nelson is doing his thing. Like, Landeskog is quietly having a good season. So they got their pieces together and their horses together again. And it's a dangerous team. And when Sam Girard's playing on your third pairing, that's a good problem to have.
And then with Florida, is their main thing just getting healthy? And then once they're healthy, I mean, do they even really have a weakness?
I mean, they don't have a weakness because of the way they play in the playoffs. Like once the playoff hockey comes around, they just wear you out. They just get the puck deep, go behind your D, and just crush your defenseman. And they take advantage of bad opportunities, bad turnovers, and then they score goals. And I've seen them firsthand in the last couple of years. Like the Toronto had them on the ropes, couldn't do it. Edmonton kind of had them on the ropes, but they didn't take advantage of game 5 going back to their building with all the momentum they had in game 4. Because I thought I was like, okay, here it is. Edmonton wins game 4. They're down 3-0. They had no business winning this game. They win the game. They're going back home. And it looks like they're going to win the series in 6 games. I was like, Edmonton's going to win this thing in 6. Like, I don't see... And then once Florida won game 5, it's like it's over in 6. Like, there ain't no way Edmonton's coming back. They don't have a weakness because they're just so good. Like, they play a certain style, and come the playoffs, their big horses deliver. Like, Verhaeghe steps up. Bennett steps up. And Verhaeghe and Bennett are stepping up now. Reinhardt's Lundell is having a quietly a great season for the Florida Panthers. And there's just really no weakness with this team. I think Florida can beat themselves if they don't play the right way. And Paul Maurice talks about that a lot.
With the Devils that you cover and see a lot, are they aware? Well, I know they had lost Jack Hughes to that freak accident, but I think he's back now, right?
Yes, or will be back. Correct.
So, do you expect them to kind of, I guess, hit the accelerator a little bit and get back to where they kind of were before then? Or is it kind of, are they about where they are, where you expected they would be?
I mean, I thought they would be higher in the stands. I thought they'd be, you know, at least leading the division, if not 2-3 in the division. But again, when your team's constructed poorly and you lose Pesci for time being, you lose Hughes, and these injuries can't be excused. But if they had actually played the right way when those guys were out of the lineup, they might still be in a position of being in the top three in the Metro. But they can't score goals. They have yet to address the problem scoring goals. You have too many of the same player. Like I wrote a piece today that went out about, you know, you have Jesper Bratt, you have Nico Hischier, you have Jack Hughes, you have Timo Meier, you have too many of the same player. They don't have any finishers. A lot of playmakers, no finishers. Jesper Bratt doesn't have a one-timer for the power play. He's not a finisher. Like, you clearly see he's a skilled guy. Meier's supposed to be that guy, but he missed some time. They're just not constructed well, and now they have too many guys that can't go anywhere. It's like 15 players have like no move, no trade protection, and it's, you know, again, did they have a chance at Quinn Hughes? Probably not. A lot of people will say, oh, it's propaganda that, oh, what people are being fed, oh, they just never had the cap space, and they were not getting him. They just were never going to get him because it's hockey, and you can't play fantasy hockey and play video game hockey. Like, if a team comes out of nowhere and offers you a better offer, you're taking the better offer, despite as much as you want to get the brothers together, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen, and Jack even knew it. He said it. He's like, yeah, it would've been cool, but this is hockey. Like, it was going to be really tough to do, and I don't think these guys are disappointed. They're professionals, and if they're disappointed, then go play with your brother and leave. But the Devils should be a lot better than they are. When they want to play the right way and they want to embrace being hard, then they can play with anybody in the league. When they don't, they struggle, and they still can't score goals. When you're averaging 2.7 goals per game and you're 27th in the league in scoring, that's a problem. I don't care if you're top 10 in defending and giving up the least amount of goals. You still need to score goals in this league to win. Last time I checked, anyway.
Yeah, that's true. I know. Kind of reminds me, I'm not looking at the numbers specifically, but I don't think the Jackets are scoring quite at the level that they were last year.
No, they are not.
But, and obviously, like, Zach Werenski is exactly where he was last year. He's basically carrying them. And Marchenko was doing really well, but he's kind of fallen off a little bit. Or, like, a lot of guys are streaky, right? But yeah. Last year, here's with the Jackets. They surprised everyone last year, obviously, playing how they did pretty much through the course of the whole 82-game season as far as either being in or at least around wild-card positioning. And no one went into the season thinking that they were going to be a playoff team, obviously, post the, you know, Gaudreau tragedy. I feel like last year, it's one of those things where you can't really quantify exactly how it was working, because it felt like they were playing with that, obviously, that added emotion. I just don't know how you can quantify that over the course of 82 games, but it felt like there was just like an extra thing there with them the entire year. And maybe this season, they're more or less the team that they should have been last year. It's hard to quantify. It's hard to say, like, but it just feels like last year they had something on their, they had that extra kick in the gear or that extra momentum or whatever. And so, of course, this year, you figure, okay, they almost made the playoffs last year. They should be a playoff team this year if everything goes right as far as health and everything. And as we've seen, they've blown so many third periods, and, you know, they if they win half those games, they're higher in the standings. But I don't know. I guess, what do you make of some of that, like, maybe that, like, magic where a team has it, but it's hard to replicate that, you know, a season later. You know what I mean?
No, it's definitely, I mean, they definitely were playing for something last year. You could tell they were playing for something last year. Playing for Johnny, and they wanted to get in the playoffs for him, and they were so close. I love that Dean Evason is playing Jack Reeves more. But defensively, they have to play better in front of their goaltenders. Elvis Merzlikins has stepped up. Like I said, I think maybe the addition of Marchman's really helped. You could kind of see the energy has come up a little bit. I think Zach Werenski's temper tantrum after that one loss, saying enough is enough, I think Don Waddell heard him and said, okay, you know what? Werenski's been here for a while. He's a leader on this team. He might not be the captain of this team, but we got to get him some help. And Marshman's a good player. It's hard to have career seasons every year. It really is. It's hard to keep, you know, it's not linear, right? Like, hockey's not linear when it comes to numbers, right? No sport really is. But it's hard to replicate career seasons year after year after year after year or get close to them year after year after year. And yeah, I think maybe everything wore off from a year ago. But I thought this, and maybe they're just fooling everybody with the way they played last year. But I always thought Columbus was always a tough out and, you know, they could be a playoff team. And I had them as a playoff team before the season started just because of what they were bringing back and the way they were playing under Dean Evason. There's still a lot of hockey left. They're not out of it by any means. But maybe, yeah, are they the team they probably should have been last year? Yes. But that doesn't mean they can't turn it around because they had a really good second half last year too.
You know what's crazy is looking at the Blue Jackets games going back to November, I think it was November, I just had it, November 20th. That was the last time before the last win against the Kings that they basically went a month in the sense of winning a game and keeping the opponent under two goals or two goals or fewer. So that just shows you like how many goals they've been giving up. And yeah, the defense, I like Jack Greaves. I don't know what it is with the team in general as far as like, I think no matter how much they might downplay it, it's got to get into your head when you have a lead and you lose that game and it happens over and over. And it's like, and even Dean Evason, now I don't know what he's saying behind closed doors, but to the media, it almost feels like he's more nonchalant about that idea of like, yeah, it's not in our heads and, you know,
it's total BS. It's total BS because it is in your head. Because how could it not be? You're human. It's like all the trade talk. Like when all these guys say, I don't read anything or this and that. BS, you do read it. And you know it gets into the room. And we heard it got into the room in Vancouver and it got into the room in New Jersey. So it affects you mentally. If you can't hold the lead and it's like, oh, here we go again. We got 5 minutes left. Like, and they start coming back. It's like, oh, here we go again. Like we can't hold another lead on these guys. Like, it definitely affects you. So maybe if you can get a win where you hold the lead and you can start saying, okay, well, like, the past is the past. Those other games, they don't count anymore. We're now 1-0 when holding a lead. You build your confidence that way. So I think a lot of it is BS when they say, oh, yeah, it doesn't affect me. I don't read this. BS, you do. Because you know it does. Because you're human. Because it wouldn't affect you if you weren't human.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So we were talking about the points, like the point system in the NHL. I've always kind of wondered about this. So do you like the current points setup?
Not really. I'm not a fan of it.
Would you change it where it was like 3 points for a win, or would you not have like the overtime loss point?
Yeah, I would not have an overtime loss point. I hate the loser point. If you're going to give a loser point, just end the game in a tie then.
I guess the other thing I've thought about is, what if the NHL, I'm not saying they should do this, but what if they didn't have points? Like, what if it was just wins and losses like the NBA?
I mean, that would be kind of cool. It'd be interesting because it would be interesting to see what they do with tiebreakers. Because that means regulation wins would matter more. Like, you could still have your regulation wins, but that means no, if you win in overtime and shootout, are they not as valuable? Because you want your row wins, you want wins in regulation. So.
Yeah, because I just think about with...
Not like the NFL doesn't have a point system. They just wins and losses as record. Same with Major League Baseball. It's this is the only professional sports league that does points.
And I'm sure others have questioned it. I've always kind of, you know, just been curious. It's like, why does the NHL have points? What if they didn't?
Because there's value on a game now, because I understand why they do it, because value on a game. Because if you look at it, you say, okay, well, this could be a 3-point game tonight. We're playing for something. At least you know what's on the line.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I don't like the shootout anymore. I think it's fat. I don't like it. I was about to say it's fascist. It's not, but I just don't like it. Like, I just don't like it anymore. It was cool at the beginning, but I just don't like it now.
It's just a gimmick, yeah.
It's a gimmick, but I always liked the tie. Like, I always thought, like, if two good teams are playing hard, like, why we got to end this in a gimmick? Or give me more overtime. But if you give me more overtime, then it maybe the win should count for less points. But then, like you said off the top, we said at the beginning of the thing, with the parity and everything, if we had the 3-2-1 system, like, are the standings this close?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, because, like, it's weird when, well, like, on the one hand, the Jackets have been the victim of, you know, they, like, in 13, going back to the lockout year again, they tied with Minnesota, I believe it was, for the last playoff spot, but Minnesota had more regulation wins, so the Jackets missed the playoffs. And you look at, like, some of these teams actually have more points in general because they actually went, like, Vegas has 10 overtime / shootout losses this year. If they were in regulation, they wouldn't be as high up in the standings as they are. So it's kind of funny when those overtime losses prop you up, making you look maybe better than maybe you should be.
Right. I think, like, the one year the Islanders had, like, 18 overtime shootout losses that got them into the playoffs.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy when that – but I guess it kind of evens out where teams might get – they lose out because they did go to overtime so much and they lost a tiebreaker to another team. But, I've always kind of thought
I'm
about
that. I'm not a fan of it. I think this just creates this parity that – maybe this false belief that we have this parity that maybe we really don't.
Right, yeah. So what are – so you'll be in Florida, obviously, for the Rangers and the Panthers. So what are your New Year's Eve plans? Are you going to be – I guess they'll be doing, like, practices that you'll be covering media-wise and stuff?
Yeah, so practice is January 1st. There's a media skate.
That's right, first, yeah.
A media skate on New Year's Eve. But I'm going to try to find a watch party somewhere because the U is playing. They're playing Ohio State, so
– yeah, yeah.
So we got a little redemption from the Fiesta Bowl from years ago.
How do you feel about that game? I know where your heart is, but what is brain and heart aligned, or are you all kind of worried about it?
I mean, it depends on what Miami team shows up and what defense for Miami shows up. Like, if Miami's D is going to show up like it did against Texas A&M, then they have a shot against shut down Julian Sain and Ohio State. But Ohio State's offense, Ohio State was due to get got by somebody because they just haven't been playing well down a stretch and they didn't really play anybody all year. Then they played Indiana's good defensive game. But Matt Patricia, I think, is huge for, you know, his good defensive mind. And that's kind of scary because he's been in a situation in the NFL before and he shut down teams. So interested to see how Carson Beck plays. I still give the edge to the team from Ohio just because I think they just have the better team, I'll be honest.
I kind of feel like the way the college football system is now, where they can, if you're undefeated, you can afford a loss like Ohio State against Indiana, where I kind of feel like it could be like last year where their season turned around. Now that was a little bit different because that was the Michigan stuff. And
plus Ryan Day was coaching for his job.
Yeah. And so I kind of don't think that a loss was the worst thing to happen because, you know, they're going to reset and we'll see where it takes them. Whereas Indiana, I mean, they're a juggernaut, it feels like. But, I mean, that's not to say that they don't lose to Alabama. I think they'll beat – I don't know, honestly. They'll probably
Depends on what Bama team shows up, too. Like, if Bama's going to show up like they did against Oklahoma after it was 17-0, great. But if it's the Bama team that went down 17-0, it could be 24-0 against Indiana. And there ain't no coming back.
Yeah, so New Year's Eve will be good because, like you said, you got the Ohio State-Miami game, and the Jackets play the Devil, so I expect there's going to be a Fight Fest Part 2 happening.
Should be.
Now, I don't know if Olivier will be back. I kind of feel like he might. Well, I don't know. They have a Sunday game against the Islanders before that Devils game. So,
well, the way he was talking after that game when people caught up with him, it sounded like he was going to be ready for this one.
Yeah, that's kind of what the timetable sounded like. I'm just wondering because I actually saw like a promo where it was like for the Blue Jackets for that game where it was like Buster Douglas and Olivier. And it's kind of like, well, if Olivier is part of this promo, maybe he won't actually be playing the game. It's kind of, I forget what the promo was exactly, but it kind of felt like a subtle hint, like something to do with Olivier in which he's not going to be able to play, but you can still kind of I guess, interact with him in some way. But anyway, yeah, that's going to be a crazy, I expect a crazy game just because of what happened the first time. So I know, going back to that game against the New Jersey, when was that? Like early December?
Felt like it was December, early-ish December, maybe late November.
Yeah, I think it was like not the first, but somewhere around the first of December. So I remember, I think it was that second, it was the second period and all that stuff happened. I just remember, now you were there, obviously. The way I remember it was when a lot of those fights were kind of breaking out and happening, I don't remember the name, but there was a guy for Jersey who was kind of like, I think sort of antagonizing Fantilli, and Fantilli was like, all right, let's go. But it kind of felt like it was on both ends, right?
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely some things. Like, I know, like, the one fight, it felt like there was one-way fighting when it came to...
Voronkov?
Yeah, Voronkov and Dillon, because Dillon went out of the game and didn't come back, but he did. And so that was kind of crazy with that, with the penalties there. Fantilli was getting... Him and Meyer were going after it for a little bit, and... It was just so many fights in that second period and there was just so much, there's a lot of unnecessary BS that went on with it. Like, you know, Fantilli get to slash Siegenthaler, him and Siegenthaler were going at it, Connor Brown and him were going at it. You know, there's just a lot of fighting that went on in that game. Voronkov got his medicine back, Brendan Smith, and a lot of fighting that went on because Siegenthaler got his jersey ripped off by, I think it was Fantilli. Because you got the fight with Fantilli. So there was just a lot of unnecessary BS that one happened in that second period. But give credit to the Jackets because they kind of used that momentum to get back against the Devils in that game, because the Devils went up 2-0 in that game, if memory serves me correct.
Yeah, that's a game that I expected them to lose. I knew that was going to be a tough December stretch because the Jackets were kind of, you know, not playing great going into December. They had like a gauntlet of the Eastern Conference, and then they had games like with Vegas and stuff. And how about Anaheim? They've played pretty well with Joel Quenneville back behind the bench. And I mean, Anaheim and San Jose are a couple of those teams that have been rebuilding for a while. The Sharks are a little bit better now. Are you surprised by Anaheim, though?
Yeah, a little bit. I didn't expect them to be in a playoff position right now, to be honest. I didn't think they would be second in the Pacific. I thought they'd be battling for a playoff spot. But that tells you how bad the Pacific is this year. San Jose's ahead of Seattle, which is good. You know, they're playing well with Celebrini and Eklund and all those guys, Will Smith. Their goaltending, Askarov. Anaheim's working with that three-headed monster, Husso, Mrazek, and Dostal. But they're getting buy-in. Quenneville, they're building off what Greg Cronin did last year, where a lot of the players bought in, but you moved out players that didn't want to be there anymore, like a Trevor Zegras, or didn't get along with management like Zegras did. But, you know, you see Cutter Gauthier taking the next step, Leo Carlson taking the next step, Mason McTavish coming in, Bennett Seneca is coming in and playing really well, Mitnyakov on the back end, Zellweger. Like, these guys are stepping up, and when you bring in the right pieces, the right core of players from, you know, Kreiders to the Trubas to the Vetranos, all those guys, there's a nice, healthy mix. And, you know, Joel Quenneville has championship pedigree to him. So I like where Anaheim's doing. Maybe they're just a little ahead of where I thought they would be, but maybe not where Pat Verbeek said, because he did say at the end of last year he expects his team to be in the playoffs. I kind of laughed it off because I'm like, yeah, this doesn't sound like a playoff team. But again, they're taking advantage of teams that are not performing well in the Pacific Division right now.
Did you like Quenneville getting a second chance?
I didn't think he was the right coach for Anaheim. I still don't think he's the right coach for Anaheim. I thought David Carl out of Colorado, I thought he was a perfect coach. So, like, you bring in a coach that's like a John Cooper to grow with the team, like just because of the age bracket, grow together. But maybe he felt like this is what they could do, one more kick at it, similar to what happened in Florida, right? Like, Quenneville was going to be there for those runs, and then Maurice comes in because of all of what happened, and they moved on from Burnett. So, yeah, I mean, everybody deserves second chances, you know? It's just how you make of it outside of the rink. Like, whatever happened outside of the rink and stuff, he's owned it, he's said what he said, and you know, as long as all the parties involved were okay with it, then I'm okay with it. Like, yeah, it's not my place to judge it. He's a good hockey mind, good hockey coach, and he's going through his own personal battles and understanding what he has to do to be better. So I think he's taken that and made it fun for the players right now.
Like the Carter Hart situation and those guys, but are you like kind of like, well, the courts didn't find them guilty, he should be able to play? I know a lot of people don't like that Carter Hart is playing in the NHL right now or having that opportunity to do so, but where do you come off on that?
I mean, look, again, the court said what the court said, public opinion and social media said another thing. So, yeah, look, to me, he's got opportunity to play. He's playing in Vegas. I thought there would be a bit of it more stink when he took the ice. It wasn't. It was more outbursts when he was allowed to sign and play, and then those people just ran away, didn't say anything, and they were very vocal during the trial. And unfortunately, when you have good lawyers and things like that, you know, players get off. You know, I wouldn't be shocked if Michael McLeod eventually comes back to the NHL. We'll see what happens. Like, these guys are allowed to go to work. Like, we're all allowed to go to work. So it's unfortunate what happened. Got to use better moral judgment. But again, you know, NHL says, the PA says that they're allowed to go get a second chance. Now, if it was on the team that didn't sign them and the teams decided to collude and say, hey, we're not going to bring these guys in, that's one thing. But everybody needs players. Everybody needs goaltending. Everybody needs guys that can take faceoffs. Like, unfortunately, that's the world we live in right now.
Before I do let you go, how was your Christmas? What did you get yesterday?
Christmas was good. What did I get yesterday? I got some calendars. Got the Hess truck going. That was fun. Some small things, you know, as you grow older, you get some, you know, money, gift cards, things like that. That was good.
Yeah, for sure. Any hockey stuff?
No hockey stuff, unfortunately. No, I could go buy my own hockey stuff.
Yeah, right. I know, that's how I am. I'm like, well, I appreciate everything I get, and if it's money or gift cards, that's great, and that'll probably go towards some sort of sports apparel or something.
Yeah, exactly. Go get a new hockey stick or something.
Yeah, exactly. You skate a lot, right? Like, yeah. You actually get out in the
yeah,
ice.
Yeah, I still play a lot, yeah.
Nice. Like rec leagues and stuff like that? Or
Just fun. Just yeah. Get private groups that I've known guys forever. Start playing for fun and stuff.
Awesome. Well, thanks again. I'm glad we were able to do this before you went to the Winter Classic. And have a good trip down there. Have fun in the sun. And let me know how the experience is. I know we'll chat. So I'm curious to hear how it plays in that Lone Depot. What is it? Lone Depot?
Yeah, Lone Depot Park. And then obviously... Don't forget, in February, at the beginning of February, Stadium Series is down in Raymond James Stadium with the Bruins.
You'll be there, right?
I will also be there for that game.
I forget. I asked you this before. I can't remember. I feel like you have done this, but have you done Olympic? You've traveled for the Olympics before?
I have not traveled for the Olympics before. I probably won't be traveling for the Olympics this year. I'll probably just do it from the home offices, which, again, with the Olympics, we'll see if that actually goes off because we have a testing of the rink in a couple of weeks, and we'll see what happens with that.
Can you imagine if the NHL does not go to the Olympics and then we just have a month off of pretty much of no hockey?
That's why they're probably going to end up going, because unless they put the backup plan in place to get these arenas ready for hockey, if they decide to pull the plug, unless they're working on a situation where they play games in another venue if this rink isn't ready to go. The problem is the league has already been shut down for 2 weeks, so it's not like they can just like go to these buildings and play games.
Right. You can't just turn it on. It's already like, be like nothing.
People already probably, a lot of these venues have probably booked things for that time period.
That's true.
So it'd be really, really tough.
Yeah. Well, it'll be fun to see how it all plays out. I'm looking forward to the Olympics, obviously, after last year with the Four Nations. Can't wait to see how the U.S., assuming we have those games, can't wait to see how that all kind of happens.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. It should be fun, though. Should be good. Can't wait for the Olympics. Can't wait. You know, World Juniors going on right now. My favorite tournaments, and NHL returns on Saturday.
Cannot wait. Awesome. Well, I hope you have a good trip down to Florida and you can get out of the snow for a little bit.
No, I appreciate that, man. Definitely, dude.